Welcome to this breaking news edition of the MMA After Hour. It is Wednesday evening, April 4th, 2012, and just a few hours ago, the Nevada State Athletic Commission announced that Alistair Overeem had tested positive for elevated levels of testosterone. They said his levels were above 10 to 1. Their maximum is 6 to 1. Normal person walks around usually at around 1 to 1, so you could see a big discrepancy there. They have not announced just yet exactly how high his levels were. The UFC has not made an official comment as to what they will do with Alistair Overeem, and Alistair Overeem has not made an official comment as of 7:45 p.m. Eastern Time. Right now, though, there is a lot to discuss, and we're very happy to welcome in our good friend Mauro Ranallo of The Score and Showtime to discuss this big news. Mauro, first things first, you know Alistair Overeem. You've been around Alistair for a very long time. You've called a lot of his fights. What was your first reaction when you heard this news?
Disappointment, Ariel, above and beyond anything else. I know that you're right. I followed Alistair Overeem's career since he was a light heavyweight in Pride. In fact, Alistair was one of the first professional fighters to make my acquaintance. Not that it has anything to do with this story, but just to let you know that there is, you know, we're journalists, we're supposed to be objective, but there were times, I will disclaim right now, I got a chance to get closer to Alistair Overeem after fights and talk about life and everything, and it was, he was someone that just seemed very dedicated to the sport, very charismatic, good-looking guy. I thought, you know, this guy had all of the hallmarks of being a very marketable and successful mixed martial artist. Of course, he went from a 205-pound light heavyweight to Overeem, as he became known, and his fight against Brock Lesnar, the debut in the octagon, weighed his heaviest ever, you know, having to cut to make the 265-pound weight limit. But disappointment in the fact that, you know, it is becoming almost cliched, and isn't that scary where you almost can predict where there's smoke and the speculation and the fact that he didn't, go about the right parameters for the pre-fight drug test against Brock Lesnar. The fact that, you know, he booked a flight to go home and take care of his ill mother when he was supposed to, take the drug test by November 17th and everything that went down there. And then again, it's like, you know, the one guy that has been under super scrutiny ends up actually failing a test for anabolic steroids. So people can say they're not surprised and everyone can start, saying, I told you so. But for me, from my perspective, I am just very disappointed because looking at the big picture, not only what this does for the sport, and, you know, UFC president Dana White, who during a conference call in for Canadian media today, put the call and said that he was extremely beyond pissed with what happened. Of course he is. And so, Ariel, you look at it, it's just amazing that here he is on the cusp of superstardom, making the most money he could ever make and becoming what, you know, I think he's always wanted to do, is become a star in America. Alistair Overeem likes the good life. Alistair Overeem, you know, and why not? A good-looking dude, a tremendous athlete. Here he is a month away from the biggest fight of his life, challenging for the UFC heavyweight title. And he fails a test. And what does this say about random drug testing? Bring it on, full time, please.
Yeah, and they tested Overeem and a few of the other fighters who were set to compete on the UFC 146 card, which takes place on Memorial Day weekend in Las Vegas. The ones who did pass their tests were Junior Dos Santos, Frank Mir, Cain Velasquez, Roy Nelson, and Antonio Bigfoot Silva. We should say, though, that the Nevada State Athletic Commission has said that if Overeem requests a B sample, his A sample showed the high levels of testosterone. If he requests the B sample and it comes back negative, he would receive his license to fight. So right now, we still don't know what he's going to do. We can only talk about what's happening right now, and that's the news that came out earlier today that his levels were elevated. So if you're the UFC, let's just say he doesn't get his license. Let's just say for whatever reason, it comes back the B sample, it's not good, or he doesn't even go with the B sample and just takes a punishment down the line. What do you do with UFC 146 if you're UFC President Dana White and the rest of the company?
Well, great question, but before I answer that, I think just to put a bow on what you're talking about, a great stuff there, Ariel, is the fact that he also wasn't under license now, so he can't face any other punishment. He can't be technically suspended because his conditional license ended December 31st, which, of course, you know, the day after he fought Brock Lesnar to fight there. So we're still looking at, and this I think needs a little more investigation and talk, is the fact that there, what I understand, and you can back me up here, is that he was supposed to take two subsequent tests in order for the Brock Lesnar fight to be official, right? So this was one of those two tests. If he failed, then that tells me that maybe they should revisit the Brock Lesnar fight and make it a no contest. But Keith Kaiser told MMA Torch today that in itself, this test has no bearing on the Brock Lesnar decision, which, again, unfortunately, leaves me a little confused and perplexed.
I agree 100%. That was one of the first things that I thought, that they would, make that fight a no contest, the result. Hmm. But I read the same report, tried to reach out to Mr. Kaiser. He has not returned our phone calls. But, again, as we speak right now, a lot of questions about the situation. And I'm sure when people tune into this Thursday morning, a lot of these questions may be answered. Just trying to get a sense for the situation right now. And we don't like to speculate, of course. But breaking news audio, you're able to make another breaking news audio tomorrow. And they can listen to the MMA show on your podcast on thescore.com
as well. Definitely. You're right. The speculation is it's rampant. Now with social media, it's almost like if you're not speculating, well, you're not one of the cool kids. And to get back to your question, I it's a no-brainer for me. And I know he's already been approached. They actually sent out a press release, Frank Mir's management, saying he would be more than excited to get the opportunity. As it is right now, he is fighting former champion Cain Velasquez for the right to challenge what was to be the winner of the main event, Junior Dos Santos and Alistair Overeem. With Overeem now in a very tenuous position, I think it makes all the sense in the world. It's what you've done for me lately, Ariel. And wins, yes, are important. And Frank Mir's won three in a row. He didn't, the fight against Miracle Krokop was one of the worst heavyweight fights we've seen in a while, until the dramatic knee knockout ending for Mir, which was a win. Roy Big Country Nelson, say what you will, but Frank Mir defeated him and dominated him and with the striking. And then, making history this past December, where he not only defeats Antonio Rodrigo Nogueira for the second time, but does, a first. He's the first guy to stop the Pride legend via strikes, and then the first one to not only submit him, but, in grisly fashion, where he broke his arm. I think Frank Mir right now, former UFC heavyweight champion, and again, an amazing story, right? The miraculous comeback from the motorcycle crash. I just think right now, if Alistair Overeem is not the man, then I'd say go with Frank Mir. And I know we're hearing people, chant Mark Hunt's name, people talking about bringing in Fedor, which, come on, that is not going to happen. And again, I understand the passion of fans, but Dan Henderson, come on. You have to – I'm all for marketability and great fights, but – from a sporting standpoint, I think Frank Mir's the no-brainer. What about you?
Well, I think Frank Mir or Cain Velasquez. I mean, I think that was obviously a fight that was seen by a lot of people. I think that you can – obviously the first fight between Cain and JDS, and I think that you can certainly sell the rematch, saying that, Cain was injured. JDS was injured as well, but, it was a flash knockout. I don't want to do the Cain fight, because I just think there are too many immediate rematches right now, and I think the champion – deserves the chance to fight someone else and not have to sort of prove himself all over again. The question is,
that's what I thought about Cain, but you bring up very good points, in fact, about the injuries at the time. So
what do you do with Cain then? If you bump Frank Mir up, what do you do with Cain? Do you take Fabricio Werdum off the Brazil card, or do you not give Cain a fight?
I think Fabricio would be upset, even though that would be a much bigger fight, because he wants to be on the Brazilian card. What about a guy that's coming back, Gabriel Gonzalez, who's been up the ladder, but again, not very marketable, at this stage. I think for Cain Velasquez, if Mir does move up, then I think you continue to make other changes with the heavyweights maybe already on the card, and then maybe Mark Hunt and Cain Velasquez.
I don't know if you want to do that domino effect. To me, the move that makes the most sense, if he's willing to do it, is bringing over Fabricio Werdum to fight Cain Velasquez. And let's not even get into the fight, and it's a great fight, but the fight that's happening on May 19th in San Jose between Daniel those two guys.
Let them make nice, bring them in already. You're right. That fight's got to happen finally to end the World Heavyweight Grand Prix. But no, it's interesting that, there is obviously going to be all kinds of speculation until it's made official. But if I were to be a betting man, I think it's Frank Mir, no?
Yeah, I do think it is Frank Mir, and I think in his home city of Las Vegas, Nevada, it makes a lot of sense. I don't want to speculate too much, but let's say, as things stand right now, what does this do to Alistair Overeem's legacy? I mean, this is a guy who's only fought once in the UFC, but he did win the K-1 World Grand Prix last year. He had a great run in Strikeforce. He did win an interim title in Dream, and of course, he had his run in Pride, a very big win in December over Brock Lesnar. What does this do? Because there were the whispers. We can't deny that there were whispers, but he always sort of beat the whispers, especially over the last couple of years when he was fighting here in the United States more frequently. What do you think, if this does come out and is true, what do you think it does to his legacy?
I think it destroys it. I can't see it being anything but, you know, career-threatening in many ways because of just the magnitude of this fight. Headlining, again, an all-heavyweight pay-per-view affair, Memorial Day weekend. It is for the heavyweight title of the Ultimate Fighting Championship. And say what we will, and I was there for the glory days of Pride Fighting Championships and Strikeforce and whatnot, but the UFC heavyweight title is the one everyone wants, and with it comes the victory, you know, and the spoils of victory, and for Alistair Overeem, who always had those whispers surrounding him, like you said, and the fact that a lot of his success came overseas, and the fact that, you know, this was his opportunity. Here he comes in, he beats the biggest draw in Brock Lesnar, destroys him, and maybe for the time being silenced a lot of the naysayers. Hey, he passed the test, and he looked very good against Brock Lesnar, and the Junior Dos Santos fight, very intriguing from a stylistic standpoint. Both of them noted strikers. This was the chance for Alistair Overeem to break through to the mainstream and I think become a very marketable, a very successful, very rich man. That is all on the verge of going up in smoke, and I just can't see making a mistake of this magnitude at this time, how that can sit well with the UFC. And frankly, if it goes according to what I think it will, I wouldn't be surprised if he's cut, if he's done. I mean, when does the, you know what I mean? Like, he's ruining the UFC heavyweight title fight here.
Well, so you would actually cut him? I mean, there have been guys who have tested positive and there we've seen issues. You would actually cut him after one offense?
If I were put in the shoes of Dana White, and again, only because of who he is, and again, I respect Alistair Overeem as a fighter, and this is all, like we say, yeah, until we get the real answer, you know, this is just pure speculation, but as it stands right now, if I were Dana White, knowing what I, you know, the what had happened to get him there and everything else, and the build, you know, this was a UFC heavyweight title fight, and with all the whispers, knowing what this guy, you know, has had to overcome in terms of all the speculation going from a 205-pound light heavyweight to Overeem, and the fact that Dana White already said this today, that he says the worst thing about this is that he lied to Lorenzo Fertitta and I. I'm paraphrasing. In our office, saying, no, I'm going to pass all the tests, I'm clean. Even they obviously had some concerns. So I think this is a fireable offense if indeed it comes to pass. If it's not, you know, a tainted sample or a mistake by the drug laboratory, I can't see where Alistair Overeem would stick around because of what he's cost the UFC and his legacy and his career and his sport.
And Dana White, as he is known to be, very outspoken today when he spoke to a group of Canadian journalists. He said this, "I'm beyond pissed about this." Quote, he said, "I'm so expletive mad right now, I can't even begin." And then it just sort of trailed off. He said, as you just mentioned, the worst part is that he, Alistair Overeem, sat in front of us and lied to us. And then he sort of ended his response about the situation. Yeah. How expletive stupid do you have to be? Seriously dumb. Anybody who's using PEDs right now is an absolute expletive moron. It's beyond, what's the word I'm looking for? It's beyond belief. It's beyond comprehension. You're an absolute moron, a brain dead, absolute expletive dummy. It goes beyond a guy having any common sense whatsoever, end quote. So, Mauro, the big question is, and this we don't need to speculate about because we know that there is an issue with PEDs and MMA. It's becoming a bigger issue, especially when it comes to testosterone. And here we go. We saw what happened to Josh Barnett with random testing a few years back. We see what happens now. Is that the answer here? And again, I know that the athletic commission say that it's very expensive to perform random drug testing. Do we need to point the finger at the UFC and say, you can't keep saying it's the government, it's the government? At the end of the day, these outcomes are affecting your fights. And if you invest a little bit in this, if you do your own testing, then we wouldn't have these issues.
Interesting question, and I know that you saw it, and that was exactly the question I posed to UFC President Dana White at the UFC Calgary press conference recently, and he gave, you know, the standard response is what you just covered as well about, you know, we're the most regulated sport, and if there was, you know, this amount of testing and scrutiny in the NFL, there'd be hardly any football players on a Sunday, and so I asked the same question, Ariel, and I think even regarding the commission and the fact that they say it is so expensive, and yes, at the in the grand scheme of things, when you look at the world and you look at the country in the United States, especially the economy and whatnot, the mixed martial arts regulation probably isn't the and shouldn't be high on the ladder. But in looking at the sport where it is now and looking at what the commission's mission statement is and the reason for its existence, the safety of the athletes, if and they just proved it here, it seems. Alistair Overeem tested positive. It was a random out-of-competition drug test that before last July, there was no money in the budget. It was reinstated last July in Nevada, and look what it's now delivered. It seems Alistair Overeem on a silver platter. The UFC, I said the same thing, and I just put it to Dana saying, would it be who? I mean, just to make sure that you guys can run your business. Maybe you have to look at investing money into a fund or whatever, or doing out of competition drug testing. And to be fair to them, as you know, Ariel, they you know every fighter who now signs a contract has to pass a test. The Ultimate Fighter, they're doing a lot more, but it has to be random drug testing. I don't see any other answer to deter and try to cure PED use than you know, surprise, knock knock, please pee in this cup. And why not? That's the only way. So if it takes an investment by the UFC, a company that when they bought Zuffa in 2001 lost, you know, upwards of $40 million before they started making cash and it's their money and everything else. But if it means a cleaner sport, a healthier sport, and one that, you know, will not be tainted, and you know, Dana White wants to be the biggest sport in the world, biggest brand in the world. He's done a very good job. But I think they have to start looking at maybe trying to how do they do it independently, though, is what I'm saying. Because if they're paying into it, then, you know, it can be whatever. There has to be a way where it's almost like, for lack of a better term, you know, a drug testing tax. If you want to run this commission, then you've got to, you know, pay this so we can do other competition drug tests. I don't know. It's something that has to be done.
Of course. And there's no great answer out there right now. But you do have independent firms, so to speak, like WADA. You have agencies out there that are willing and able. Of course, they need money to do this, and the Nevada State Athletic Commission and the other major athletic commissions do sort of follow their guidelines, but it's not only on the UFC, because as we know, there are guys getting caught for this stuff in other organizations as
Absolutely.
Well. The problem is, though, that the UFC, people think that the UFC is the sport, and it's you know, the same way they think that the UFC hires the judges and the referees. It's like my issue with refereeing. Just because the UFC comes to town, just because the UFC puts on an event in Nebraska, doesn't mean that local Joe Schmo Nebraska referee gets a shot at the big leagues. When the NBA has a game in Oklahoma City, the local gym ref in Oklahoma City doesn't get a chance to ref that game. There needs to be a little more uniformity, and I think if it needs the UFC to go out there, if it calls for that, to go out there and invest a little in cleaning up these issues, we're just going to keep talking about them every single year.
Sure.
Something needs to change.
Yeah, no, and you bring up tremendous points, and I agree with you 100% in regards to the officials. It's a case where everyone keeps saying, "Hey, it's still early. The sport is still young." Well, that you know, the excuse and whatnot is growing a little long in the tooth. It's actually getting very old. They may be young, but the line is getting very old. And I think whether it is again with the commissions, the government, a body, and for all intents and purposes, yeah, the UFC is a mixed martial arts organization, but they're the juggernaut. They're the large one. And I think these issues are, in fact, starting to come back to, you know, the UFC, because the mainstream media, the casual fan, like you say, do you fight UFC? It's the Kleenex of the sport. And I think they definitely need to look at, you know, these kind of factors that impact their product. And if I were them, I would definitely have to really start taking a closer look. And Mark Ratner obviously was a huge step in the right direction, bringing him in the executive vice president of regulatory affairs. But it's you're right. We can't keep talking about these issues. Something has to be done.
All right. So as of right now, we don't know what's next for Alistair Overeem. For all we know, he may beat this and actually fight Junior Dos Santos at UFC 146. And I think everyone involved in MMA hopes that's true, because he is a very talented guy.
What happens then? You say that, Ariel, but holy smokes, Wouldn't that open up Pandora's box if that were the case?
Oh, absolutely.
Because we go into the testing. So, I mean, I just don't see this being a positive part of the fun.
No, you're absolutely right. I was just trying to put a silver lining on all this. I want to ask you one last thing before we let you go, and I don't even know if you actually saw this, but did you see that video? And this has nothing to do with Overeem, but it's been sort of a gloomy day in MMA, if you ask me. This video that Rampage Jackson put out about how to pick up a girl. Have you seen this video?
I have received the video and, in fact, was going to take a look after we finished this, but please do tell here. From what I've heard on Twitter, it's not a great representation of Mr. Jackson.
I think this will be a good radio. If you have it in front of you, are you able to watch it, and we'll wait for your reaction?
You know what? Actually, here, let's, you know what, I might be able to find a radio. Actually, what you could do, because now it's becoming bad radio here, is... do you have it in front of you at all, or where do I see it? I could just go and...
Oh, I do have it in front of me. Okay, let me pass it to you right now. I think people will like the sort of impromptuness of all this.
Was this something that he knew he was obviously being recorded? Is it a skit? Is it a...
Oh, yes. This is a skit that Rampage Jackson was involved in. It was uploaded, and I'm sending it to you as we speak.
And it was done recently?
Oh, yes, it was uploaded today, and just one second. All right, it was uploaded today by a group called, and I just sent it to you. So it was uploaded today by a group called Film On Live TV. It's a 1 minute and 28 second clip. I sent it to you via email, and you should be receiving it soon, so it won't take so long. And the clip is called How to Pick Up a Girl, spelled G-U-R-L, fast. And this is Rampage. Rampage is starring in the clip, so he's not being ambushed here or anything of that nature.
Okay, and I apologize, sir, but I am in your native Canada, and obviously the hamster has taken a break because the wheel has stopped spinning, and I have yet to receive this email. You sent it to my Gmail account?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay, well, what the heck is going on here? Okay, well, come on, just tell me then. What's the deal? Can you play it? Or are you allowed to play it right now?
I just sent it to you via Gmail chat. How about there? Or is there a delay?
I'm on a certain member of technology that obviously I should actually promote because it's not helping me, but it's not its fault. There it is, from Ariel Helwani himself. Here we go, kids.
All right.
I've received it, so let's do this. Here we go. So this is Quentin Rampage Jackson, and set the table for me again.
Yes, Quentin Rampage Jackson involved in this skit of sorts by a group called Film On Live TV. It was uploaded to YouTube on April 3rd, and right now Mauro's going to watch it.
All right, here we go.
Give us a sort of running diary, Mauro, as you're watching.
Okay. It's a very well produced piece where Quentin Rampage Jackson is designing life with Quentin fast. Okay, see, my internet, this is going to be like watching a badly dubbed Japanese film, ladies and gentlemen, which I know Quentin Rampage. Okay, wait, I think it's catching up. Here we go. Okay, so it's like pop-up video already fast. So he's talking about the wardrobe.
Yeah, so I will talk. I'll give the play-by-play because I know.
Okay, go ahead.
So he's telling people how to pick up a woman. So he's giving them a few tips. He's showing them what you need.
Oh my God!
So he's sort of dressed up as a guy who's about to rob a bank. He has chloroform. He shows you that. He shows you sort of this plastic zip tie that you need. And he puts a sort of ski mask over his head. He's hiding in a parking lot, and all of a sudden he sees a woman who is searching for her car keys. He attacks her, but wow, wouldn't you know it, the woman ends up being, I guess, a transvestite who chomps on his genitalia, and he runs away. He's pants, he's embarrassed, and I guess... His way, I guess what's supposed to be funny here is that the tables were turned on him. I think there are a lot of there are a lot of people online who look at Rampage as an idol, as someone that should be held in high regard. And if they think that this is the way to pick up a woman, it could send mixed signals.
okay, there's a part of me, and just looking at it, how it turned out, like, you know, Funny or Die, all those kinds of websites and on internet. And I know, you know, Quentin obviously has a movie career. If this is, you know, just a skit in a Saturday Night Live wannabe segment, okay, I can see it being not exactly funny, but it's, you know, risque, it's pushing the envelope. And then, yeah, like you say, the tables turned on him. If it's meant to be like that, maybe it's not the wisest material to choose. But you're right. In terms of what it depicts and stuff, I can see a lot of people, especially, you know, nowadays, yeah, taking umbrage with it. And I'm looking at it right now, 315 views, according to my website here, with 56 thumbs down, 53, though, thumbs up. So, again, it's how you interpret it. Would I be involved in something like this as right now with everything going on in Quentin Rampage's world? Probably not.
Yeah, and obviously I'm not a hoity-toity guy. I mean, I like to think that I have a sense of humor. I just think that to say that this is – I guess basically it's not funny. And if
no, and after you, at the end of the day, it's exactly it. It wasn't funny. So the one, you know, and then the showing the chloroform and all that, like, yeah, well, it's not a funny subject, not a funny material. Like I say, well produced, Quentin. Okay, you know, is this a demo reel? We're supposed to judge Quentin's character. Quentin's always a charismatic, camera friendly guy, but yeah, I don't see the point of this skit whatsoever, and it wasn't funny, and it conveys, yeah, very, you know, a lot of stereotypes.
Absolutely. All right. So I don't mean to link the two subjects, but it was sort of bugging me. And I thought, since you tweet 4,000 times a day, I thought.
Hey, whose fault is that, by the way, everybody? Blame Ariel Helwani. I had a Twitter account, I think, for a year. I may have tweeted twice. And he's like, dude, you got to moral of all people. Come on. Get on Twitter. You're going to help yourself, help everything. I'm like, nah, dude, it's too much. Facebook, all this. So I get on Twitter. I discover its benefits, and because I have an addictive personality, and they don't call me the bipolar rock and roller for nothing, I want to share all of me. So thank you.
Oh, yeah, my pleasure. Okay, final thing, Mauro, before I let you go.
Yes.
I say it was somewhat of a gloomy day. I had a chance to talk to King Mo. Obviously, a very tough week for him. He said that he met with Pat Lundvall yesterday. He called her up, would like to meet her in person, apologized to her. She accepted his apology, and he actually said he feels horrible for what he tweeted last week because, as he said, she's very cool. So what do you do with King Mo now? I mean, he has apologized. He says he's going to change things. He's going to seek counseling for anger management. Do you bring him back to Strikeforce? Do you find a way to bring him to the UFC with the possibility of people once again saying, all right, you guys are just firing people and bringing them back a week later? Or do you let him go and take the risk that he goes and joins your competitor now in Bellator? And on the flip side, if you're Mike Hogan, his manager, what are you advising him to do? Where do you think he will end up?
I think they should suspend him like he is suspended to, you know, September. They have to come up. There is a code of conduct and a standard contract with the UFC, and so they are allowed to do what they do. But Dana White has proven time and again, and, you know, this is who he is, a very emotional, you know, very impulsive at times, the way he reacts to negative things. And we've seen what happened with Miguel Torres, fired but came back. And you know, the Forrest Griffin rape is the new missionary, and how Dana tried to you know, explain that. There's been other instances that, you know, they have to be consistent. And that's what I think is the big issue here, is the consistency. Should King Mo have been fired for what he said on Twitter, and in light of now what's happened, where cooler heads have prevailed? And first of all, you should never have called her a racist bitch. I had him on the show the next day, and I could understand why he felt so upset at the time, you know, talking about his life in the South and whatnot. But And maybe, you know, even as standard procedure, they say that this is, you know, they ask this of a lot of people. Well, maybe 20 minutes in to the hearing where it's already been established, you don't need to reinforce. I think it could have been handled better by both sides, but I think that he should just be suspended, maybe fined. But there's no way that I think, you know, especially the way we know King Mo as a guy who, you know, he's a great guy to talk to, a great interview, an up-and-coming fighter. I mean, a guy who's already going through so much. And I think the UFC needs a guy like King Mo. I think he's a tremendous athlete and a definite a contender to look out for. And whether or not you bring him to Strikeforce, knowing what the future really is there for now, yeah, let's, you know, I think he's needed in Strikeforce. I'd like to call a vacant light heavyweight title fight with him, but he's going to be on the shelf for a variety of reasons for a while. And so if he's not going to be back until 2013, we don't know what the landscape is going to be then. But I definitely believe he should be brought back. He deserves a second chance. I think he has definitely learned from his mistake. And if he's not going to be brought back, I think, a Bellator Fighting Championships definitely would be an alternative. And he's already had some success in Japan, not knowing, if there are any big shows coming there for the rest of the year. But I think a guy like King Mo will find work soon enough. But I think the right thing to do is to let him heal up. And he's now made peace with Pat Lundvall, learned from the mistake, and I think he should be brought back.
All right. Well, there you have it, from Alistair Overeem to Rampage Jackson to King Mo. Obviously, the Overeem situation, a very fluid one. It may change by the time you hear this. And, of course, Mauro will be talking about it tomorrow on Thursday, thescore.com, the MMA Show podcast. And you can also catch him on May 19th for Strikeforce Cormier versus Barnett. Mauro, always a pleasure. Thank you for the insight. Hopefully we'll get more information in the next day or two on this situation, whether or not Alistair Overeem will be a part of UFC 146, and we'll get some more clarity as to who Junior Dos Santos will in fact be fighting on Memorial Day weekend.
I'm sure you will, and I actually would love for you to join me tomorrow, because I'm sure there'll be other news.
Me,
and if
really?
You can return the favor, the MMA Show, 2 o'clock Eastern, get all those hell wannabes tuning in, giving my show a chance for a change. Thank you.
Well, I've just been noticing from afar that it seems like every journalist under the sun has gotten the invite lately, and now...
Because it's called Media Monday, and some guy has a show that's called the MMA Hour, ladies and gentlemen. If you look up Hour in the dictionary, and I know why he does it, try to be a funny Canadian guy. This hour has 22 minutes and it goes an hour. I think if your show went from 1 to 2 like it's supposed to, then you could join me at 2:30 for Media Mondays on my show. Thank you.
If you want, maybe one day we'll do a trade. I'll
Woo! My show. I don't know. I don't know if the wannabes will like that, but hey, anytime, mister. And by the way, really great stuff on UFC tonight and everything
don't
else.
Lie.
And it's really a pleasure.
You don't watch UFC tonight. You don't get that anymore.
I do actually watch it online. I don't get it, but I watch it online. And I think you guys do a great job, and actually a great story. And then now here we go again. But it is funny, this business. And I'm glad that you're starting to do these after hours, because honestly, Ariel, isn't it hilarious that when we first even talked years ago, hey, people were saying, oh, is there enough content? You guys, can you do this on a daily basis? This is crazy. It's absolutely crazy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you do a show every day. I wish I could do a show every day. There's certainly a lot to talk about, and the websites would vouch for that. A lot going on. Unfortunately, these days, it seems like there's a lot of negativity, but never a dull moment, and that's why I think we love this sport so much. And yes, we were a little afraid, I think, during this break that the UFC went on, what we were going to cover, but thankfully, the break is over soon for the fans. April 14th, they return to Sweden, and you can catch that, by the way, on Fuel TV. Mauro, once again, thank you very much for stopping by, and we'll tune into the show tomorrow on thescore.com.
Yes, and I look forward to having you on with me at 2 o'clock Eastern on thescore.com for the MMA show, because I know we'll have probably a lot more news regarding the Alistair Overeem situation in UFC 146. Always a pleasure, Ariel.